Cropod contains language and themes which may not be suitable for anyone, but what is suitable for everybody is the great stuff from our friends at The Famous, iconic wear for bears. Go check out thefamousheadwear.co.uk. Great stuff over there. And if you want to win some stuff from them, scroll down, hit the Buy Me a Coffee link in the show notes on this episode that you're listening to right now. We give away stuff from them every single month here on the Cropod. So check them out, thefamousheadwear.co.uk.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Pulled in just behind the fridge. He lays her down, he frowns. Gee, my life's a funny thing. Am I still too young?
Exactly.
Man, that fucker's in the South Pacific somewhere doing God knows what.
Yeah. Never bloody home.
I tell you. Fucking Canadians. Welcome back to another episode of the Cropod. It's just me and David, as you can tell. Yep. We're still bitching about Todd, motherfucker.
He's never here.
He's not. He's like an American highway bridge. You know, he's here one moment and just gone the next.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you said that. That's fuck. I mean, whoa, that was awful, wasn't it? That was.
I just watched. Random documentaries and the kind of crap that me and you do, but I just watched a very lengthy one about the Skyway Bridge there in Tampa. Kind of suffered the original one suffered the same fate, or at least one part of it. Was that in the early 80s or late 70s? I mean, at that point, it was, you know, the same kind of like a container ship that got lost in a storm, and same thing, it hit a span, and that one killed many more people.
Yeah, but, at the time.
God damn, I couldn't believe that.
That was the only fortunate thing about it, was it was, I think, 1:30 in the morning, wasn't it? So, I mean, obviously, had it been, you know, commuter time, it would have been absolutely, you can't even begin to imagine. But, oh, yeah, just absolutely horrible thing to have happen.
No, it's nuts.
And it's one of these things, it's a bit like airports, isn't it? That you take so much for granted because stuff just happens about you and you don't really notice. But when you think about it, you know, like all those planes going in and out at, you know, the speeds they do, carrying the people that they do, it's an incredible feat of organization for stuff like that. Same with all the boats transversing the riverways of the world. You know, it's quite an incredible thing. And it's only really when something goes wrong that you realize how impressive it is that it doesn't go wrong more often than it does.
Yeah, but, I mean, I guess As long as you're not on a Boeing plane, then you kind of halfway expected at this point.
But I mean, the Baltimore, of course, famous for The Wire and for Francis Scott Key, writing your national anthem when we kicked your ass in 1814. I think, you know, we sent a troop of, what was it, about 34 soldiers to the landmass that was America, and won, which is not one.
And you got to keep Canada for the grand old effort of it.
Yeah, so. but the thing about it is that it's rare that it comes up on the. I've seen a lot of American history documentaries, and very rarely do you go to town on the. Yeah, and then the Brits, you know, like 11 of them came for a holiday, and while they were here, set fire to our capital, and we just stood back and let them. But all joking aside, it was just a horrible event.
It was terrible. Actually, you know, you brought The Wire there. There's that, what was that, in season two? There's one scene where he's standing there talking about, you know, like, see that bridge? That bridge will be here forever, just like my union and my,
exactly. there's a big debate about series two. For Wire fans, and I'm sure we've got a few listening to it because people of discerning critical abilities. And one of the arguments you get, you know how each series of The Wire is kind of standalone?
Yeah.
With the exception, I would say, of 3 and 4, which I think are very linked. But you get people, now the best series of The Wires are 3 and 4, right? Either one you can pick, I think. They are just they should be put up on in a frame in some sort of art gallery, because it transcends television. It's that good. But you get people who will argue this on your Wire chat rooms. It's like, no, series two is the best one. Like, no, it isn't. That's like the kind of people who will sit and argue with you, like, the best track on the White Album is Revolution Number 9. And I'll explain, because it's avant-garde, and it's and you're like, well, yes, but it's also...
Yes, but just objectively, no.
It's not as good. And look, The Wire Series 2 is excellent. Don't take me that it's anything less than 5-star, because it's not. It's brilliant. The characterization in it's fantastic. The story, Shane just referred to something there. You know, the points they make are superb. But it's that sort of thing that people do to say, well, I'm going to be quite different and show how much I'm like Joey Barton, for example. Look how contrary I am. It's because I'm cleverer than all of you. Like, okay, that's fine.
Look at my white denims and everything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Look. What do you think of these white denims? Well, I think, to be honest, they were probably a wee bit of a bad choice for paintball, Joey. But you know,
that 3 a.m. purchase, you could have returned. But you know, it's fine.
It's the thing. Yeah, the whole thing, right, about women's football. Right? I'll be quite honest here. I don't follow it. Okay, don't follow it.
I'm glad to see, like, when our team wins or pisses off.
Definitely. And I'll watch you know, the old firm games or the big cup finals. But generally speaking, and it's not anything to do with the sexuality of the women, the sex of the women or men. It's just that there's certain leagues I'm interested in, certain ones I'm not. I watch Serie A, for example, but I don't watch German football. Right. I don't know. Just some things capture your attention, some things don't, and it's cool. What I don't do is this Joey Barton-esque thing that you see some people do online, which is, I don't like it, and therefore it shouldn't exist.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, therefore, no one should like it, and no one should talk about it. It's quite easy to avoid if you're not into it. Right? It's really not that difficult. And then, of course, don't get me wrong, it can be a little bit... you know, kind of strange, I think, that some people get so het up about it. I don't really understand. If it's not your bag, and it isn't mine. But I had an argument with a guy who I know for a fact, right, loves, genuinely will not watch, like, the Champions League or the EPL, calls it plastic football, but he watches lower division Scottish football. And he had the fucking audacity to say to me, but the women's game, the standard is rubbish. And I was like, right, whereas fucking cow and beef versus Spartans is a home run, is it? I mean, get to fuck. The reason that, if we're only talking standards of football, we would all watch Manchester City and Real Madrid, and that would pretty much do this, wouldn't we?
Over and over. Well, I think there's a little bit of irony, too, in being like a champion of the lower Scotch divisions and then calling something else plastic football, given what all of the lower leagues play on.
Well, yeah, so there is that. But yeah, I just, football is, that's not the point. Is women's football the same standard as men? No, and it's nowhere near. And there's nothing wrong with saying that, right? There's nothing wrong. They know right. that. You won't find anyone within the women's game who says that it's, well, maybe, you know, Megan Rapinoe, but you know, if you talk to people in the Scottish version of the women's game, they know it. But their point is, and I think it's a legit one, we are, you know, decades behind in development of it. Because we're really just starting. We've only been playing it really for, you know, the last 20, 30 years, and it's going to take us a long, long, long time to catch up, if we ever do, which is unlikely because of physicality. So that's, you know, totally it. And yeah, the goalkeeping isn't great. I grew up in the 80s. Scottish goalkeeping was a fucking joke, right? I mean, it was a national joke. Jimmy Greaves on St. and Greaves Day, they had a section every week where they would show howlers by Scottish goalkeepers. It was Andy Gorham that basically changed our perception. Chris Woods, when he arrived, it was like, oh, right. It's not just
they can use their hands.
It's not just the fat kid you put in there. Right, we get it now. So you're absolutely right. I think there's a legit argument for women's football that they could maybe make the goals a wee bit smaller based on the fact that people are smaller. Clearly, they're not going to fill a goal as well as guys that are 6 foot five, 6 foot six. We've seen it ourselves, haven't we, with goalkeepers where we've gone, he's a bit short at 5'10", 5'11", because, you know, you like your goalkeeper to have that commanding presence. So these are all things that you can work on. But yeah, if it's not for you, just, you know, don't watch it. It's not doing any harm, is it?
There's so much other sport on. You can literally get on your, you know, for like the ESPN app or your Sky app or whatever the hell, you can watch anything. I could probably turn on the TV right now and watch curling if I wanted to. You know, I mean, like, you can literally watch anything at any time from any part of the world.
I don't like curling, right? I don't find it entertaining. I don't want curling banned or no one to ever talk about it, right? It's not my thing, and that's okay. So there's plenty of men's football that I like that I watch. And here's the thing, right? I'll just be quite upfront. I find international friendlies as unappealing as a cup of cold sick.
Right. Yeah, the worst thing in the world.
Boring and pointless and played at walking pace, and you get 119 substitutions and they're rubbish. They're just utter rubbish.
Even if you repackage friendlies as like, you know, a Nations Cup or whatever the hell the lower tier, you know, continent wide fucking leagues are, I don't even know what the hell they are. It's still, but I don't care. It's a friendly, right? No, nobody gives a fuck about winning this thing, except for like the really, really, really low seeded sides that might backdoor their way into like a, you know, UEFA championships or CONCACAF championships or whatever the hell it is. Yeah. Although, I mean, let's be, you know, just like with UEFA, I mean, the same four teams are the only ones that have a chance of winning it. So it doesn't really matter. I mean,
that's football. Yeah. That is football. But it's all been a good laugh, I think. But you know, watching Joey Barton implode. At first, I thought he was grifting, and now I think he's just, you know,
he's just the Joey Barton
from not being, I mean, a very pleasant individual. Yeah, that's it.
He's just a prick.
People have said to me, you haven't really spoken about it on Heartland, which I hadn't up until this, and it's because I don't want to give this guy to. He doesn't deserve room in our thoughts. So, you know, no, we've nope. Speaking of,
bad enough that you got to wear a shirt for a couple months. So
bang on. That's the other thing, by the way. Having watched his contribution to Scottish football, he should not be fucking having a go at anyone kicking. And I mean anyone kicking a ball up here. I mean the fat drunken left back of a pub team on a Saturday morning. He should not be having a go at. So no, you're totally right. But things are good since last we met. I've made best friends with Paul Gascoigne, so there was that. That was good.
He looks very well.
He's doing great. He's got good people looking after him. He's you know, not drinking, taking care of himself, and people who don't treat him as a cash cow, you know, sticking him into like his old management would have him playing pubs and stuff. These are, you know, not good environments for him. But no, he was brilliant. Genuinely taken aback by people turning up, because he was like, tell us at the start of the night, he goes, you know, do you think anybody will come? Because obviously it was Glasgow and this is London. I was like, people are coming, yeah. And then the reaction he got, he was, you know, he was quite touched by it. You could see it. But what was quite funny, you'll like this and our listeners will like this as a story. So backstage at this year, the Leicester Square Theatre. To put this in context, Ricky Gervais was playing there, right, this week. Right, he's doing a kind of warm-up tour for, obviously, he's much bigger tour. So, for Ricky his, Gervais...
bigger tour of not telling jokes.
We're in there, and we go in, and they had a wall that you can leave them at, you know, a kind of graffiti wall, right? That you could write something on there. All these comedians, all these British comedians that people would recognise the names, you know, Stuart Lee, Catherine Lawrence, Ricky Gervais, he was on there. Basically anyone who's been on TV in Britain in the last 20 years is up there. So Gaza went and he wrote his message and I went, fuck it, I'm doing it. So up there is Ricky Gervais, Stuart Lee, Paul Gascoigne, David Edgar. And the boys will add to me, are we allowed to do that? I was like, are we playing here? And they're like, well, yeah, there you go then. I said, well, fuck it, why not? We've sold the place damn near out. We're allowed to do it. But it was quite cool. They were having, there's a new Ghostbusters movie out, apparently. It seems to be a new Ghostbusters movie every 15 minutes. Yeah, but Leicester Square in London is where they have the premieres of movies in the UK. Right. So I'm walking down to our show in Leicester Square. If anyone's been, it's buzzing, you know, that whole area. It's kind of like Times Square, do you know what I mean? There's like shows everywhere and it's always open. There are always lights on, always, but it's just, you know, huge kind of tourist attraction place. So I'm walking from my hotel and there's this, and I was like, that's the fucking Ghostbusters car. And there, so it was. There was the Ghostbusters car, and there were like people with, you know, the proton packs and everything. And I was like, what's going on, mate? And he's like, it's the premiere of this is tonight. And I thought, oh, fuck, I'm playing that theatre there. I need to go. So it was quite cool, but we did get photographs of the Ghostbusters car. That was there.
The Ectomobile, sir.
Yeah, the Ectomobile. So I mean, that was a cool thing about our trip.
Use its name, David.
Well, the other fun thing about it is after the show, right? I was knackered, so I didn't stay out for long. But the boys that were doing it, Adam, Martin, Tammy, they went out, right? Understandably so, you know, a good few listeners were there.
Well, it's you away, so yeah. I mean, the game's over. You go back to your hotel room, and
Well, yeah. I mean, that was me. Yes, I was quite happy. So, but I was knackered, so I was like, lads, I'm just away. I'll leave you to it. So, Martin, what time's your train tomorrow? It's 12:30. So I'm getting that one. I said, great, right? We'll go. I'll meet you, and we'll go. His hotel was next door to mine. So next morning, get up. He's dying. Right. I mean, he is dying. You know that way.
I mean, to be fair, I mean, a night away from the very small Martin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He is little mini Mart who's already developed the sigh and the skill. he has no qualms about the parentage of that child, it's fair to say. But he's like, oh, I'm dying. I said, well, no bother. You know, the good thing about me is I'm not much of a talker on public transport anyway. So we get there and I head to my carriage and he's like, oh, are you in first class? I was like, you're not? And he's like, no, I'm not. And I'm like, what? Because of all the people that I thought, you know, would spring the extra, it's Martin. And he's like, no, I'm not going. So I had that decision to make, right? Because obviously he can't
come
and
sit with
me.
My mate and coach,
do I go sit with him or do I go in first cut? And I was like, mate, I think you know how this is going to go. Backslap, fucked off to my seat. And I was like, you know, he can come up and say hello to you on the journey if you like, but no. But to be fair, I think he just slept anyway.
Yeah,
he's journeyed back up the road. I think he just fell asleep
out on the tiles there Saturday.
it was good, a lot of fun. That's us kind of done. That's all our live show commitments done for a while, which is good because I don't need to worry about that and think. Because I saw a thing in the paper today. There's a call. I wish Todd was here just to be on this passing, but not our fault. He's too lazy to show up. It's the international. I know, fucking freeloader. Do you know who he is, by the way? I've worked this out. He's the Chris Novoselic of our dyad, right? He's the one that fucking got lucky
he's Dan Egan.
He's like, what are you doing here?
Gets all the awards, does fuck all. That's it.
Yeah, like Sam Lammer's getting a medal when we won the League Cup there earlier in the season. It's like that. So, there's a Glasgow Comedy Festival on at the moment, and I saw a thing in the local newspaper that this girl was coming up to do her show at some venue. I didn't even recognise the venue name, so it must be really tiny. And she hasn't sold a single ticket. And she said, but I'm coming up anyway. Did you see it? Yeah, just in case people turn up. And I was like, oh, I couldn't do that. I mean, I really admire her. I was going to say her balls, but that would take us into a completely different conversation. I really admire her chutzpah because I could not do that. Like, I wouldn't.
Well, I mean, she should just go on Twitter and, you know, go like do like 4 or 5 pro SMP ranty tweets. She'd sell out like that. I mean, it doesn't matter what the fuck her material is at that point. Yeah.
No, that's fair, but
she have like Fern Brady'd be out there plugging tickets for her.
I think she'll probably, whenever you say I haven't sold a single ticket, people will go just as you know.
Yeah, no, they'll respond.
Publicity on it, so I mean, it might be quite clever, but I couldn't like, you know, she's taking the train up from London for the show. I was like, no. If we'd been going down there and nobody was coming, it would have been cancelled. there's a break even point, and if you haven't hit that, I am not doing the show, quite frankly. That's the time to go. But I suppose if you know, like in any, and if you're aspiring to something, this is the kind of shit you have to do. I remember reading a book about REM, and they said that what they did when they first started is they got a van and they got a booking agent, and they said to this guy, just fucking book us anywhere, we'll play in it. And for 2 years they literally lived in this van, drove about, and he said we would get into some town never heard of and we'd go to the place to play and it'd be like a chicken restaurant, right? And you'd be like, they'd set up some like pallets and go, right, on you go. But the one of the reasons they made it is they went, what we decided pretty early was, do you know what? If there are 10 people there, let's play a fucking great show. And then when we swing back, because obviously they would drive for it, and then when we swing back, they'll all bring a friend. And that's what happened, that they would go out and they would play to 10, 20 people. But the next time they came around, there'd be 100 people there. And it got that kind of buzz up. And they'd done that for 2 years, which meant when the record came out, there was already an established audience. Well, I saw them at a tiny wee club. And then you've got an investment that you kind of want them to get big, don't you? You can say, I saw. And there are people in the US who, you know, in REM things will say, I saw them at a chicken restaurant in 1981 and there were like 11 people there. And you just think, wow, what a fucking great story that is.
So I got a buddy of mine, he met his wife at a, I forget who all was on the bill, but, you know, like Green Day is the one that, you know, that matters at this point. But it was in Beloit, Wisconsin. at a place that holds maybe 45 people. So, you know, it probably only had about 20 in it from what he said. And I guess there's a recording of this shit. If I could find the date and everything, but it's out there on YouTube, which is cool for him. But it's where he met his wife at this tiny show that Green Day played at this little ass place in Beloit, Wisconsin in like 1991 or whenever the hell it was. And it's the same idea. You know, I was like, oh, fuck it. I mean, do it now. So, you know, next time when we're playing Milwaukee, maybe they'll drive over or Chicago or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah.
Like, hustle it.
Yeah. It's a kind of always play. Because I've seen bands when I was, you know, writing a music blog, and I'd be going to maybe like 3 or 4 gigs a week. Yeah. And a lot of the time it was just, you know, young bands playing at King Tut's or whatever. And I remember very much one show, there was a band and they did a couple of great singles. No album out yet, but there was a bit of buzz about them, you know, because they had these two great singles. And we went along to the show, and apparently they'd sold like 120 tickets or something, right? Which is a very decent amount for like a. But that night, the weather was appalling. You know what I mean? It was really, really bad. And I think there was Champions League football. There was a big match, if I recall correctly. Anyway, probably only about 60 people out of the tickets were, like, showed up. You know, the tickets were sold, though. They're still making the money on it. But the singer came on and just, he was like, you know, didn't want to be there. And he's like, you know, we thought we'd, like, loads coming to this. And it's hardly anybody here. And the show was atrocious. And I wrote this thing, you know, about it the next day. Just saying, look, you play to the people that are there, don't play for the people who haven't shown up. There were people who had gone there who you had a chance to bond and impress and maybe make a fan for life with. Yeah. You know, that's the power of it. You somebody that could have been banging your drum 20 years later, and instead you had a room full of people just going, well, fuck them then.
That's why enough, when Todd doesn't show up, me and you still show up and fucking do this thing.
That's right, yeah, because we have a commitment to our art. You know, that's the thing, Todd. You know, unless he just wants to be on the bill at some comedy club where he gets to go on and spout and all
Moose
these
slack
right,
jaws, yeah, fucking wherever.
Oh, anyway, I meant Moose Sam Malone's. Yeah, that's where he wants to go. Where he wants to just sit there and, you know, ask questions that the audience go, "Hey," and he says, "Hey," and you know, oh, Canadians. Perky little
he can host that one show where he doesn't even do anything. All the other people write the jokes or whatever. It's,
lazy. We can say that he's not here this week, right? See, whenever Todd's plugging his show, Write Him Up, guys, right? What that is that it's like an improv thing. It's like Whose Line Is It Anyway? That the audience suggests something, and then the writers who've come along to do the show, they write the jokes and pass them up to Todd to perform on stage. How fucking easy is that? Right? That's not performing. That's just reading. And if the joke kills, he can go, "Hey, that was me." And if the joke is rubbish, he can go, "Well, I'm not writing. I'm just reading." You know? Absolute disgraceful human being he is. I'm appalled. I should be writing.
I mean, you should, David, you probably didn't let me. You should hear some of the jokes he told last week. It was, my God. Oh.
Yeah, terrible. I heard we had to put a warning on it. On the website, you know, just contains Canadian. Just before the letters started
poutine
coming out.
Flowing all over the goddamn place. Hey, we're not going to take a break this week, so go check out our friends at famousheadwear.co.uk, blueroomart.co.uk, and of course our good buddy Mark Boyd with recovery and repair massage therapy. Sunday, she got in the tickets. Right? You know, there's this, Gary Mullen in the works. It's, you know, they're like a Queen tribute act. And, you know,
Gary Mullen, yeah, he's Scottish.
Yeah, he's fucking great. Yeah.
He won Stars in Your Eyes over
yes,
here.
Yeah.
Yes, that's him.
So,
yeah,
no, we weren't
playing America. Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so it's Sunday night, right? And, you know, she got in the tickets like back, I don't know, she got them for Christmas or whatever. And, you know, good seats. They're at the Coronado, the nice theater here. And, you know, we're right there. But we're going out for dinner before. And there's not many options downtown on a Sunday. You know, they're just, very few places open anymore. But so we go to my friend's bar, and fucking at the exact same time, so starting at 7 o'clock, right? The exact right. same time, 3 blocks away at the arena, is a WWE event.
All right, okay.
And this is about the only bar that can seat more than, you know, 20 people at a normal time, let alone when nothing else is open. The second you walked in, you could tell who was going to WWE, who was going to the Queen show. It's a very strong dichotomy.
I love that.
In the room.
Love that. I remember being in London years ago for a show, The Cure, playing the Royal Albert Hall, and it was a real hardcore Cure audience, right? Because it was hard to get tickets. They were playing the first four albums in sequence, right? So it was going to be a long show, and it was, they ended up playing 63 songs because they did the singles and the B-sides as well. So I think the show ended up touching 5 hours, but to get tickets was really fucking hard. So the Cure audience that were there were hardcore Cureites, and we went into this pub just before it, and it was half goths, right? And half people. Half people who were going to Miss Saigon at the theater down the road. And it just, what a fucking snapshot of humanity it was, my man.
Oh, God. I mean, that the show is great. Well, you know, because they do the whole, like, the mid-stage Queen light show, you know, where, like, you got the three big racks of lights and everything, and the ones on, I mean, it was very good. It was very, very. My only problem, like, I have an issue. Oh, goddamn. I have an issue with like the really white strobe lights. Not like the old school, like, kind of yellowish looking lights, but the really, really pure white ones.
Are they the ones that make them move kind of slowly on stage when they're those ones? The ones that
go. Yeah, well, see, so they have those that are, like, under the risers, right? You know, like, just like how Roger Taylor's drum risers set up. And then there's white ones going around either behind the riser up or whatever. But anyway, I discovered this issue years ago. I was at a Collective Soul show. And, the white lights apparently can knock me, just literally knock me out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I just went, apparently I just went unconscious. And, you know, everybody, I mean, look, it's a reasonable assumption with me. Everybody thought it was wasted. But I hadn't been drinking that day at all. It had just literally knocked me unconscious. So, yeah.
You could save a lot of money then.
Yeah.
Instead of buying beer, just buy a strobe light.
That's I never thought about that. Fuck.
Yeah.
Hold on, let me make a note. No, I felt bad because we had, like, you know, we were right center. We were in the, like, the eighth row in the orchestra pit and everything. You know, like, really fucking great seats. And I was like, I might die if I keep sitting here. So we moved. Honestly, though, it was kind of, you know, we moved toward the back of the auditorium, and it was slightly more enjoyable because the seats back there aren't, you know, fucking, I mean, it's an old theater. And, you know, it's made for when people were, like, 5'6" back then, as opposed to, you know, me being, like, 6'3" and not built for this kind of stuff. So it was a great show. I loved it, and
listen to how polite I've been about it.
I know you haven't said one bad word. Well, it's because he's Scottish. So
I'm actually, you know, fair play. I'm actually well done to the guy for turning it into a career, and obviously a very. I mean, if he's playing there, you know, in the US. All these,
I mean, it's like a 2,000 seat theater. They've got fucking dates on this tour.
Look at, like, the Australian Pink Floyd. They've made a fucking. They play arenas here, you know, and in the States they play like 10,000 seater arenas. So there's fair play to them for. I did once see, I think, the greatest named tribute act I've ever seen, which was a Meatloaf tribute that was just. Not a big star, but just playing a gig in Glasgow, and he was called Pete Loaf. Which is, you know, he's like, "Hi, everybody, I'm Pete," and his name was Peter, and he was a Meatloaf impersonator, so he was Pete Loaf, which I think
I like. There was one in the southeast years ago. It was called "The Name of the Band Isn't Talking Heads."
That's
and obviously
great.
They were that was pretty good.
That's pretty good. I was in an REM tribute band, as I maybe mentioned on here before, and we made the mistake of giving it a name, not a mistake, we did it deliberately, you would only know it if you were a really hardcore REM fan, because we only played hardcore early REM stuff, like none of the famous ones. So we gave it the name, and instead you're meant to give it a name that people instantly recognise, like the Australian Pink Floyd. You know what you're getting there. There are Australian blokes playing Pink Floyd songs, right? That's straight to the point. Whereas I think that we maybe went the other, but it meant that everybody who did come to a show knew, you know, what they were getting. They weren't getting anything, you know, popular. You know my take on that sort of thing. Doing things that people like.
That's not what we're here to do.
I remember years ago when I went to see a psychiatrist, right? My work made me. This was at the height of some issues, it's fair to say, regarding, shall we say, some substances. And we were sitting and we were talking away, you know, and the psychologist, I can't remember, was one of the two. She said to me, would you say that you're a people pleaser? And I kind of thought for a minute and I said, in all good conscience, I can't answer yes to that. I am not a people pleaser, it's fair to say. It might be, in fact, it would be termed possibly the opposite of that. It's fair to say. Just on, you know, regular things that come up on the Crow Pod. I was in London, as you know, and I mentioned earlier, we had a nice fun discussion about it, for 2.5 days. I left on the Wednesday morning, and I left Wednesday morning at 10 a.m., and I was home 6 o'clock on the Friday. All good, no complaints, travel was great, hotel was great, show went brilliantly, with my pals, loved it. Come back, Sally, while I was away for 2.5 days, had fallen and has broken a rib. And I said to her, I was like, I am so fucking glad.
Did she step in the same hole in the floor that she stepped in before, or how'd she?
No, she's blaming the dog. She says that the puppy peed on the floor.
No. Sally.
Exactly. So she said, I was like, I am just so glad that I have a fucking cast iron alibi that I was at the other end of the country on a stage in front of 300 people, right?
There are
photographs and witnesses, right? I can call Paul Gascoigne to the stand to say, no, he was next to me on a stage, right? At this, because people would look at it and go, he must be knocking her about, and I couldn't.
David finally snapped.
I couldn't do as much damage to her as she does to herself, and I wouldn't mind. Except that it's catching, because I've taken to falling recently. And our house is like Abe Simpson. It's like, you know, on one of our regular trips to the floor. And I said to her, I wouldn't mind, but your clumsiness is catching. I'm starting to get it now, where I'll be walking a lot. Like, there are times, the other day I was ready to come out the room with 2 cups of tea. I'm like, no, I'll make 2 trips, because if I carry 2 cups of tea, there will be an hilarious comedy incident where I go arse over tit, scald myself, and throw the rest of it into the electrics, thus fucking plunging the whole house into darkness.
Step on a fucking garden rake or two or three.
Yeah. And I was like, it's not fair that your clumsiness has become contagious, that I am now regular. But the thing is, see when Sally hurts herself, which is fairly regular, she's not stoic, right?
Right.
It's fair to say. She is. Yeah. And I can understand. I'm not either. Right. But when she'll say, oh, no, I'm bad. Now, I'll try and take care of her as best I can. But a broken rib, now you know this, you've had a broken rib. I have, I'm sure a lot of
those. Oh, yeah, no, we discussed this not long ago. It's in the top three. It's the worst
horrible
thing.
Right? So I genuinely do have sympathy for her, right? But, so you got everything you need, right? Okay, painkillers and stuff, prop her up, make sure she's comfortable, and can I get you anything, right? I'm going to just sit and read my book, but if you need anything, just shout. She then begins to believe that I am house, right? and that I can solve complex medical problems that nobody else can, such as a broken rib. So she, it's so painful. And I'm like, oh, it's a shame. But by the fifth time of, oh my God, I'm in so much. I'm like, what the fuck do you expect me to do? There is nothing I can. It's a broken rib.
There's literally nothing anyone can do.
Well, the doctors have said that. The doctor said that, you know, we can't put you in a cast or anything. It's, I'm afraid, you just take long breaths because the short breaths can lead to pneumonia. Take long, yeah. Even if it's painful. Keep yourself highly dosed up on painkillers. It's the only thing that works. And you just
don't move.
Fix it. Hi, basically. But she's
eat like, once a day because eating hurts. So
yes,
just get up, all done in one like, shot.
Like, oh, Dav, can you help? No, I cannot. Right, I cannot fuse the bones back.
Like, well, here's some mouse tears. Yeah, there you go. That'll fix it.
Yeah, honest to God. So, I mean, I said to by the end that I was like, Sal, you know, what did the doctor say? And she was like, right, you know, do this, do that, and take long breaths because your tendency is to take little breaths and that can cause pneumonia, right? Can cause bronchial problems, and she had bronchitis not that long ago. And I said, right, that's good. Did he also explain that you need to stop moaning to me or you're going to be smothered and breathing will not be a big issue because I will have, you will be taking no breaths because that pillow there I will use.
I'm just going to break a rib laughing.
Yeah, to smother you.
Jesus Christ.
And, oh my God. So I was away for 2 days. Two fucking days. Yep. And I come home and I was like, just.
All hell's broken loose.
She bought a chainsaw, remember, and I mentioned this, and she said to me, it's funny, she mentioned to me that last week, she's like, do you remember I bought that chainsaw? I was like, yeah. She went, I've never been able to find it, and I want to use it to chop down the, and I was like, I'll be honest with you, I've hidden it.
Jesus Christ.
And I said,
you will catch blame
it.
For that one. I mean, that's...
So I said, no, I've hidden the chainsaw. And at first she thought I was joking. She's like, ah, where is it? I was like, I'm not fucking telling you because you will use it and you will lose an arm. At best, you will lose an arm.
That's all I'm saying. Yes. Use it, lose it.
Yes. So I was like, nope. Under no circumstances am I allowing you. It would be like letting a pyromaniac loose with some petrol and some matches. You can't do that. Bad things will happen. You've got to take the responsibility for it. So no, not, well, yeah, not good at all.
So we've got tomorrow. Well, I mean, you know, well, shout out, since we're not doing the break, nobody gets to hear Rocky Top, but my Tennessee men's basketball team's into the Sweet 16. So, hey, see that again. This is usually where we get knocked out, though. So we'll see how that goes Friday. But tomorrow's opening day of Major League Baseball.
I was going to say, yeah, you're getting all baseballed up. Here it comes. It's happening.
Yes.
It's now.
So, well, so there's two things to go through here. One's fun and one is well, part of the problem of sport. You know, since we brought up Joey Barton, let's just get this one out of the way first. But this is actually about a very good player, not a Joey Barton-esque player, but Shohei Ohtani, who I'm sure, you know, you're at least familiar with.
Very rich man.
Yes. Well, not yet, but he will be someday. But his problem now, apparently, he might have a little bit of a gambling problem. I don't know if you've caught any of this. That
is it like Vegas gambling or is it gambling on games?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? So his interpreter was fired by the Dodgers, and the story changed 3 times before the official story came out. And what they ended up going with was that his interpreter had stolen over $4.5 million from him. The original story was that Shohei was covering his gambling debts and it was a loan. And then I forget what the middle story was, but obviously, you know, I did a whole episode on this. If anybody wants to scroll back up about rule 21 in Major League Baseball, which you can't associate with gamblers. You get banned for life from the game.
Yeah, cause it's...
Now, if your interpreter is a gambler or you
Arnold
are
Rothstein.
Gambling,
Arnold Rothstein. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's one of those ones, you know, it's like when UEFA or whoever throws the hammer down on, you know, even like a good player, but no, you know, no, nobody, I mean, like, you know, had Messi come out saying like, oh, I clear, you know, 30 million euros a year gambling. They would have been like, fuck, you know, like, yeah. Can't really do anything about this, can we? And no. I think Major League Baseball is having that moment right now where the guy who just got a $700 million contract might have a gambling problem. They're kind of going, fuck, well,
I don't know how we hide this. It's one of these weird things in sport, isn't it, that we take these young men and we give them, you know, untold riches, and we tell them, remember, you're not allowed to gamble. Here's a shot with a gambling company on it. You're playing in a stadium that's named and festooned by gambling stuff. But don't gamble.
Let's break down the Shohei Ohtani incident. Be sure, this segment brought to you by FanDuel. Use code INTEGRITY to get 10% off your next bet.
And look, they do need to look at it. Because, you know, in the old days, you know, because players have a lot of time, well, they're supposed to be resting, but they're young guys, you know, in all sports, that in the old days they used to go and get drunk, but even then, actually, or go to the bookies, you know, it was a thing. Steve Clary just talked about that he was training one day and like a grand fell out of his sock, and they're like, why the fuck have you got a grand in your sock? And it was so he could go straight to the bookies without having to get changed. So, you know, that's how bad his addiction had got, because it's a horrible thing, gambling. It really, really is.
Oh, yeah.
Not giving anything away, because the Gaza show is going to be broadcast at one point. So he told a story about when he was in Italy, and we said, you know, any cultural differences? And he said, oh, loads. And he goes, but the one that sticks out, he said, we're playing Milan. And before the game, I saw our captain and their captain, you know, having a chat in the tunnel. So guys, was like, that seemed quite intense, you know. So he says, as we're standing there in the tunnel, the two captains turn around and say, right, today's going to be 0-0, going to be a draw. And he's like, what the fuck? And they're like, well, you know, we need a point. It was 2 points for a win back then, so a point was pretty good. We need a point, Milan, because we're going for the title, and a point gets you into the European slots. So it's going to be a draw, basically. He says, but Papin was late into the tunnel, and he scores two in the first 10 minutes. Right? And guys is going, you know, what the fuck's going on here, right? I really don't know what to do. He said, so I score, right? And the captain turns to me and he's like, good, well done, right, we need to get that other goal back as well. He said, so we're playing away. He goes, it's the most boring fucking game. He says, you know, every time I start a run, my own teammates are fouling me. He said, and we get a corner, and I'm going over to take it, and the captain comes over and he goes, just chip it in. He says, no, I'm going to hit it, you know, I'm going to put a bit of swear, a bit of pace to the bat. He went, no, just chip it in to the centre, like a golf swing, just a wee gentle chip right into the middle of the box. All right. So he said, so I chipped this, you know, nothing ball, this could, he said, the Milan defenders, the famous Milan defence, he said, they're standing there with like newspapers out looking at the bookies form, and our striker heads it in, and that was it, 2 each, he said. Because he goes, no money changed hands. He said it wasn't, you know, corrupt in that sense. It was just, you need a point. We need a point. He said, the Italians think, they don't think like us. They think, well, if you need a point, you need a point. You'd be stupid not to do it. That's their take on it. They don't understand why you would risk it.
There was something else in the NBA. I forget who, was it Portnoy? I don't know. I think it's somebody who plays for the Raptors. See, if Todd was here, he'd be able to fill us in on this, obviously. Yeah. The Toronto team,
he's bastard. Let us down in so many levels today. I tell you.
But this guy come out, the player come out and said, like, I would take the under on all my prop bets in tonight's game. And yeah, he wasn't wrong, because I think his under was like, it was a 4.5 over under, I think, on his points scored. He finished with 4. It was 3.5 on his rebounds. He finished with 3. I forget, you know, there was what it was like, the over under on his 3 pointers made was half, you know, so whether he hits none or one, So he hit none. And then he suddenly got injured, you know, right when he was at the level of all these things. And then, of course, you know, all the betting sites, you know, because they look at strange betting patterns as they do. You know, we often hear about this in, like, I don't know, Slovakian tennis or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were a lot of strange betting patterns on his prop bets specifically for this game. So, yeah, it's been a fun week if you like the gambling and sport issues. But the other fun baseball thing, we can use this to wrap it out before we get to the onion shit and whatever else. So next, not this coming Monday, right? But the Monday following, we have a total solar eclipse passing over a very good chunk of the United States. And it's actually crossing in southern Illinois where the one in, what was that, 2017 did? It's going like right through the same area, right? So I was looking, you know, because me and my friend Bradley, we go to ball games, you know, throughout the summer. And he's a big St. Louis Cardinals fan. And my God, would you look at that? The St. Louis Cardinals play on Monday, April 8th at 6:45 p.m. in St. Louis. And the eclipse passes through southern Illinois at about 1:45 in the afternoon. So me and him are going to get up that day, drive down to southern Illinois, sit out in the middle of the country somewhere, and watch the sun disappear, you know, for 4.5 minutes. And then we're going to go watch baseball for a couple hours. So, yeah, it's going to be great. That's a weird trip, but fuck it.
That's a fun ass day, my friend.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a good ass day. Yeah.
I before we get to the onion and the wrap up, yeah. I've got a 90s film review.
Oh my God, I forgot. You know, I wasn't thinking. I'm sorry. Hold on.
David's 90s film reviews.
I'm sorry to all the listeners for even thinking that we were getting out of here without that. My God.
Yeah, no, that's fuck what they it. Come for, man.
You know, see, look, I'm checked out like time. I'm in Bora Bora myself, you know.
You know how I mentioned earlier that we're Nirvana, right? Then this is the Smells Like Teen Spirit, right? You might not want to play it one more time, but that's what they're here for. And we've charged them like £100 for the ticket, so.
Well, yeah, we'll get it on the out. See, now I'm going to make them wait because now they won't know when it's coming again.
Yeah, good point. But this week, I decided I'd go back and watch an infamous 90s movie, I think it's probably fair to call it. Mm. It is Kevin Costner's Waterworld. And I believe that is the full title of it. Now, as I've mentioned on here before, for me to watch a movie takes longer because I don't just sit and watch the movie. Because I have no concentration, I'll pick up my phone and I'll go and talk to Sally and I'll you know, go and read a book for a bit and stuff. So to watch a movie, it takes me, I would generally say, for a movie that's an hour and a half, it'll take me about 2.5 hours to watch, right, with pausing and doing our things. Waterworld took me 3 nights to finish. It lasts longer than the actual Ice Age did last.
I was gonna say, it's about 2.5 hours, so yeah.
Well, I thought it was about 3, right? So and
well, there might be a director's cut. I don't know.
Yeah, it ended up being about 6 hours in total for me to do it, and that was 3 nights of 2 hours each, right? Wow. I mean, fuck me. Now I am a connoisseur of shite. Right from the night, I am, and I'll hold my hands up. But wow, I sort of feel like my eyes have been indecently assaulted after watching this film. This is Kevin Costner plays like a bloke with weird fishy gills on his neck.
Look, see, it ties into my baseball thing because isn't he called the Mariner? Isn't
yes,
that
he
name
is.
In the...
yeah,
yeah, see, that, so there we go. Yeah.
I wonder if he was related to the former England and Arsenal striker Paul Mariner. We'll have to find out about that. But the plot, such as it is, involves him going into the water to stop some people doing something. That's really about as much as I recall from this. So I thought, you know what? Might not be great, but like, we've talked before about Heaven's Gate, haven't we? Another famous, expensive movie. The thing with Heaven's Gate is it's weirdly paced, right? There's a weird pacing issue to it. It's quite slow and it doesn't ever really take off the way it should. But the plot itself is fairly simple. And the money, you can see where it went. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It looks amazing. So I would recommend people watch Heaven's Gate with the understanding that you're unlikely to adore it in terms of it's not going to get you off, you know, and you see that as one of the best movies I've ever seen. But the acting's great, and it looks just sublime. You know, it's a beautiful looking thing. So I just assume Waterworld. Because didn't it cost like $8.6 billion?
Yeah, it was the most expensive film ever at the time. Apparently, is very expensive. Because that's apparently, the only thing in the fucking movie.
And I just
you know what? Hey, you know, maybe that was part of it. It was a you know, like a metaphor for post-apocalyptic world. Because water will be very expensive in about another 25, 30 years. So maybe that's what they were trying to get at. We just missed it. David.
Do you know what? I'll turn off my kind of what's happening and just enjoy the splendor, if you like, of the money.
You can't.
As Shane says, it's like being in a shower. If you've ever had a really good, powerful shower and you decided for whatever reason to open your eyes when you put your face into it, that's what Waterworld's like for 3 hours or nine in my case. Fucking rubbish, avoid.
Yeah, I don't see there's just so many. Well, because what they like find the Exxon Valdez at some point in a world that is apparently covered in 30,000 feet of water. So you found something at the bottom of a bay in Alaska under a world that's covered in another 30,000 feet of water on top of the No, like there's no, yeah. The best thing to ever come out of Waterworld was what was it? The Dana Carvey bit where he's talking, you know, like that. How you can't piss into a Mr. Coffee and get Taster's Choice, you know, which is like how they're getting all their drinking water in this. Oh my god.
I'm someone who's quite happy to. You know, like watch a movie and take it on its own. Like I found a great one for next week that I'm really looking forward to covering. And it doesn't have to be great, doesn't have to be expensive, doesn't even always have to be that good, right, for me to enjoy it. But this thing was just
awful.
You
get like Dennis Hopper doing his Dennis Hopper.
And I love Dennis Hopper, right?
Yeah,
I
mean, but it's like it's
even
just...
then doesn't work because it's Dennis Hopper in a shower, which is kind of pointless. And the worst part of it was as I was going to pick True Romance and didn't, and picked Waterworld because you know because obviously with these movies you're just like right okay and I'm gonna dedicate myself to this. There's no football on, so I have time. So I said no, I'll take this. Oh my god, it was the first time I hadn't seen it. You see, I hadn't seen it back in the 90s, so I didn't have any like I've seen True Romance about 100 times, right? But I had no expectations of it other than I thought, you know, this is supposed to be not that good. So, first of all, there's the thought it probably isn't as bad as people say, right? You know, because that happens a lot when a film gets monstered, when a film gets monstered when it comes out, it can. You know, the ball can start rolling and then suddenly it just becomes a fact. So I thought, no, I'll sit in that. No, just absolute garbage, folk. Not even, there's not even the Sharknado so bad it's good about it. It's just, it's just bad.
No, it's just bad. Well, I think there were a lot of, well-panned nicknames, like Fishtar was one of the
Fishtar, that's brilliant. And then, that is brilliant.
The other one was Kevin's Gate.
The
one good thing that this movie did was make Kevin Costner stop making movies like this and just go, you know what, I'm gonna do fucking westerns. That's it. I'm not doing anything else.
He's back with one now.
Well, fuck, he's already made 9 seasons of one, so you know what the hell.
Yeah, but he's back with us. It's like a big epic American thing about the West. That Kevin Costner films, if he doesn't have a moustache, I really don't want to know. Although I did see a brilliant, just out of nowhere, Field of Dreams, which is a great movie, right? It is.
Yeah.
But I saw this, it's like a Simpsons clip. It was just if the Simpsons from the new series, which has some funny moments, and in this one it basically the idea is Anonymous hack into a Simpsons episode and say we're going to show these terrible clips that the Simpsons have for the future, and in this one it's Field of Dreams, and Marge just goes, hang on a minute, you built a field for dead baseball players to come and play. And he's like, yeah. She's like, well, that makes perfect sense. And he goes, no, honestly. And she's like, I can't believe you did this. And then Homer's like, no, you're standing on the 50-yard line. So she says, so you built a gridiron pitch for baseball players to come in. And she's like, yeah. So it's a genuinely great moustacheless movie.
Yeah. Well, here, just to wrap it up here, this is from director Kevin Reynolds, right? His own summation of the film. My own personal take on the picture is that I don't think it's any better or any worse than most summer blockbusters. It's somewhere in the middle. So there you go. From the director himself.
That's accurate. That's honest. But at the time, and this will sound really strange to people, Kevin Costner genuinely was the biggest star in the world. He genuinely was.
Yeah, I mean,
really
this is
was.
Right off the back of Dances with Wolves and everything like that.
Robin Hood. Yeah, so he'd hit box office, he'd hit critical, you name it, he decided to throw it all away on Kevin's Gate.
Well, and just, you know, for Dennis Hopper here, he actually won the Razzie for Worst Supporting Actor that year. So
fair, but I don't know what he could have done with it.
I don't either. I mean, it was shit. It was a flawed idea. I mean, it was like Mad Max on water.
Dennis Hopper strikes me as somebody who went along, realized what was unfurling, and went, fuck it, I don't care.
That's kind of what he did during the 90s. I mean, it was, you know, like,
he was
doing the same character he did in Speed. He was playing the same character he did in that one with Wesley Snipes. It's like, I don't know.
But he was fantastic in True Romance.
That's true. All right, so there we go. Right,
whoever came up with the idea of, we're going to get, this is just genius, we're going to put Dennis Hopper and Christopher Walken together for a scene.
Yes. Yeah.
It could fail.
There you go.
You could hand those to a phone book. And
I was
going to
say, maybe toss Willem Dafoe in there for the hell of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
there you go.
That always reminds me of Family Guy, where he's like, I've got a Willem Dafoe under my bed. And Stewie's lying there, terrified. He just slides in. Yeah, I'm down here, kid. And slides back in again.
I was watching some show. I don't know, it might have been like a Graham Norton show-esque thing, whatever. And, like, you know, the guests come out, and, you know, finally, like, Willem Dafoe comes out, and he starts talking, and one of the other, I don't know, TV film people is sitting there just staring at him. And finally, like, he gets done, and the guy's like, I thought you were British. It's like, no, I'm from Wisconsin. He's like, what?
How do you think Willem Dafoe is British?
He's from, like, Milwaukee. You know,
it's like... It's actually a real shame because it's I don't think it's 90s, I think it's 80s, because I would have done Mississippi Burning, which is a fucking...
It's right around 1990.
I'll have a
look. We'll have to look that one up. Hold on, for a later edition of...
David's 90s Film Reviews.
That's the one.
All right, let's do some Onion. Let's get the hell out of here. Before we get Todd back. I don't even know if he's back next week.
He fucking better be.
He could be like Kevin Costner floating around on some weird boat drinking his own piss right now. I don't know.
or as he calls it, Wednesdays.
Oh, man. See, nation's bony women announce they are shivering.
Study finds majority of Americans no longer have energy to stand while brushing teeth.
One for the crowd there. Prince Andrew claims pedophilia scandal was just Palace's attempt to cover up his ongoing battle with cancer.
I like both things can be true at the same time, says man lying twice. And this one will make you laugh. Man has no one in life left to stop him from posting lengthy video condemning new Ghostbusters.
Oh, fuck. This kind of ring out the weekend here in Rockford. Irresponsible millennial wasting money on coffee instead of pulling out gun and robbing everyone in store.
See, he would get a mortgage if he did that. And this one is all of us,
oh,
right?
Oh, man.
Dripping food strategically held over other food. We've all done that.
Hold your gyro over your chips.
You hold your burger just over the chips so that the sauce and the gravy just drops onto it. We've all done it. Very strategically placed to eat so that you know that any dropout from the bottom is going to hit on top of the fries. That's the way we work it around these parts.
Oh, man. All right. Oh, God. You know, I didn't. Did you see the Beetlejuice preview, by the way?
Yes.
Trailer?
Yes.
My God.
People have been losing their shit because people have been saying things like, oh, it's clearly going to make the woman the star of it rather than Michael Keaton.
Okay.
Michael Keaton, go back. You haven't watched Beetlejuice for a
Gina
while.
Gina Davis was the star in the original one. What the hell are you talking
about? Michael Keaton is in Beetlejuice for about, what, 20 minutes?
4.5 minutes, maybe? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, this is the first film. It's not about, because his performance was so great that
yes.
It became, but that's tell me you haven't watched Beetlejuice for a while because, you know, that, yeah. I don't know how good it will be, you know, all these years later.
Look, it's Michael Keaton. It'll be good. I'll enjoy it. It doesn't matter. He's so good.
He's brilliant, yeah.
So good. See, now they gotta find a project for him to finally get an Oscar because he should have won it for fucking Birdman. And they gave it to DiCaprio. No, because that was your DiCaprio won it for The Departed. Or not The Departed, The Revenant. The Revenant. Which is one of his worst films.
One of his most.
All he did, he does it. He says four lines of dialogue, and then he crawls across the screen for three fucking hours.
That was the deal, though, that year. They said to Leonardo DiCaprio, "We're going to give you it for torturing yourself to make this movie, and that we should have given you one several times before." So
it's like Paul Newman winning it for The Color of Money. Finally, you know,
yeah,
it's like,
and, or Al Pacino, Scent of a Woman.
Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right.
Robbed Keaton of fucking Birdman.
Keaton should have had it for Birdman, which is a fucking brilliant movie.
God. All right, that's it. We'll be back sometime next week. I don't know. David's stuff, of course, you can find everything on Heart and Hand. Go check all that. You said you guys are going to release the Gaza thing here?
Yeah, basically it's going to Gaza's people, and when they come back and say, yeah, all good, we will let it go.
Okay. Cool. All right, so yeah, go check that out over there, and I don't know, we'll be back sometime next week. We gotta figure out if Todd, well, if he's still alive, because he's not responding to stuff, but I don't know how the internet in fucking Bora Bora works, so fucking cocksucker.
Yeah, but imagine going on a holiday sponsored by pissdrinkers .com. Strange
Canadians.
Man,
fucking Canadians. Tell you, yeah. But no, we'll hopefully we'll find Todd. We'll be back next week, so we'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Some people call me the space cowboy. Yeah.
He can't be fucking serious at all.